Welcome to the Smart Woman's Club Telechat with the Expert, Dr. Leslie Cipini. The Smart Woman's Club is a community where professional women increase self-esteem and confidence so they can thrive in their careers and really love their life. We're on the web at www.smartwomansclub.com. Knowledge is power when it's used, and this telechat gives you knowledge that you can use right away. It brings education to you to help you thrive in your career, which enhances your self-esteem and increases your confidence. You'll learn directly from the expert. And also, in that, you hear how the expert directly impacted her life from what she's done and how she got to be the expert in this. I'm Smokey Sizemore, the founder of the Smart Woman's Club, and welcome to our telechat with the expert, Dr. Leslie Cipini, with Excuse Free Life. Dr. Leslie, welcome to our chat today.
Thank you so much for having me, Smokey. I'm so excited to speak to your group.
Well, thank you so much. And you have Excuse Free Living. Why are you so passionate about Excuse Free Living, and how did you come up with Excuse Free Living? It sounds so radical today.
Well, I love excuse-free living, and I have a tremendous passion for it, mostly in part because I love helping people, and ever since I was a child, I knew that that was my talent. My talent was talking to people and being able to give them guidance based on not only my life experience, but my work history and experience, as well as what I did educationally, getting my doctoral degree. So I use a combination of those three things, and that's how I decided to create Excuse Free Living. I saw that as I began talking to more and more people, that really what was holding people back in their lives was excuses that they would make to sort of stay in denial or angry or not have to do the work or not want to become disciplined. And I began to realize it creates a lot of drama for people that's so unnecessary. And I thought that I could share some advice with my four C's to help them.
And what are those four C's?
The four C's are to have curiosity, which is the foundation of everything, having a curious intention about something and trying to seek out more information about that, trying to reach out and talk to people, trying to read as much as you can about that, just like every child starts with curiosity from the time they're born, to maintain that as an adult. The second one is conviction. With conviction, knowing that you believe in your value system and that you have the right, even if you don't believe for sure that you can do the thing you want to do, but that you have the innate right to explore that and that you have a belief in yourself that your value system is the right value system for you.
And that conviction is similar to being bulletproof, isn't it? When you know you're just so sure that this is the right thing that you can take all the arrows and slings and stones that come at you and you can still forge ahead.
Absolutely. And it's really, you know, a cornerstone to living an excuse-free life, because the more conviction you have, the less explaining you do, the less power you give away, and the more that you set up a life with purpose and vision and that you have the conviction to do that, the more successful you will be. And the third one is courage. There we go, courage. And, you know, life is about taking risks. There's no way, even if you feel that you're a stay-at-home mom and you feel safe, your husband's out working, as we've seen in today's economy, there is no such thing as always being safe, whether you're from the top up to the bottom or from the bottom up to the top. And so really learning how to empower yourself with courage and put yourself out there and take a risk. And every choice you make in your life takes courage, even the small ones, whether you're going to get in the car today and go to the grocery store, whether you're going to pick up your child rather than someone else pick up your child, whether it's, you know, how you want to choose going up the corporate ladder if you choose to do that, or keep yourself in a lower management position. So it takes courage to make those decisions and stand by them. And then finally, commitment. You can't do anything unless you're committed to it. No matter how much conviction you have, you can be very self-righteous about your conviction, but if you don't have the commitment to take action and really do something about it, you can't go very far. So those are the four C's that intrinsically we all have within ourselves. These are things that we all have. It's not something somebody has to give you. It's not something that you have to take from somebody. It's not something that you have to earn. These are four qualities within you that can be completely life-changing.
And how did you come upon these four qualities to be so succinct as the four C's? How did you discover this? This is fascinating.
I discovered this through my own life journey. I grew up very poor. I grew up in foster care and welfare. I was separated from my parents at an early age. My father was sort of a nefarious type person, always in trouble, and my mother was claimed an unfit mother. And I was biracial at a time where there was no Gap commercials to make it fun and hip and sexy. And I had to start working at a very, very early age. When we came out of foster care, I was almost 7 years old, and I already was being put to work so that I could pay for my own lunch tickets and lunch meals. I had to think outside the box. And I started to realize the importance of not only the discipline of the work, but also the importance of having my own money, which allows me to have the freedom and independence to be who I want to be without being controlled by outside influences.
So at an early age, you learned the power of having your own money and your own influence, and you learned your own power.
My own power, and that I had a right to choose, that I was not defined by my circumstances. I was defined by the dream that I had for myself, the vision that I had for myself. And in my case, at a young age, by the time I was 9, I knew that I wanted to help people. And the way that I was going to do that was to first self-educate myself outside of the school system. I knew that I had learning disabilities, and so my way of handling that was to read everything I could read so that I could improve not only my perspective of life and that there was something bigger out there for me, but I could also improve my writing and reading skill set on my own.
And did you have role models for this, Dr. Leslie?
In my case, no, I did not have role models for this. Both my
so
parents
this is
did,
completely self-driven?
Totally self-driven. My parents had not, they graduated, I think, up to 8th grade, both parents. Two of my three brothers dropped out of high school by 10th, 11th grade. And then I had one brother who later in life went on to college, but it was many years later, so there was no influence there.
Mm-hmm.
We were street kids. We were street kids who were all just trying to survive, and the four of us were bonded by blood, and that was every day was about survival.
Yeah. Well, you are certainly a testimony to being in a self-directed track that was beneficial.
And it's a track that everybody can be on. You know, it's a track that if you learn appropriate boundaries. And I know that your group, the Smart Women's Group, really has a lot to do with the workplace. You know, learning to fall in love with the word yes and the word no, really knowing how to set those boundaries and being comfortable in that role and saying, yes, I want to do this, and no, I don't want to do this, or I don't want to be influenced this way, or I don't want you to violate my space. And being in partnership with people rather than approaching people as, you know, I'm the only expert or I'm telling you what to do and sort of pointing the finger. I'm the boss. I'm your mother. To be in partnership and allow them to have a voice so they feel that they're part of the growth experience with you.
And women are so good at collaboration, and that's really one of the strengths that women bring to the workplace, more willing to work together than to work necessarily alone and competitively with someone else. Let's all work together and get along and get this done quicker and better and know each other in the process.
Yeah, I think women, we're terrific at creating teams and organization of those teams. What we're not so good at is not taking things so personal.
Oh, amen. You hit that one on the head.
And that's what becomes disruptive when we're trying to manage others, when we're in interpersonal situations in the workplace or at home, is taking things personal and not recognizing that how that person communicates with you is how they deal with the world. It's not just focused on you. It's truly who they are. You take yourself everywhere you go. And trying to learn to limit yourself that when somebody is that negative, instead of arguing with them or feel defeated by them or want to compete with them, you say thank you in your mind and you bless it. Why? Because they've told you who they are. And now you don't have to carry them with you. You now know who you're dealing with. They've given you the information. You bless it. You say thank you. And now you know how you can best respond to protect yourself and still be part of the team.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say you bless them, and you accept them how they are, and then you have the information you need to better work with them.
Absolutely.
And you use work to protect yourself or not, because sometimes you don't have to. Sometimes you have an ally there.
Well, you know, and here's one real tip and tool that I use all the time, and we always have to remind ourselves this, particularly as women, we love to share. We love to share. We love that cooperative effort of getting to know somebody, hearing the details of their lives, telling the details of the story. We love to share. We love to help others. We like to be caretakers. But if you're doing most of the talking and they're doing most of the listening, they know everything about you. You don't know anything about them. So whether it be in the workplace or in your personal life, to do 70 to 75% of the listening, particularly when it's important, to really sit and listen, allow that person to share their story, share what's about them. Now you not only know what you know, you now know what they know.
Exactly. I found last night at a networking event that I asked questions as a coach. A lot of my training is in how to ask questions, open-ended questions. So I always start with an open question. And I learned a whole lot about six women that I talked to last night. And I realized that when the evening was over, they knew my name and they knew I was a business coach. And that was it, because they were focused on them.
Exactly. And that's really one of the tenets of excuse-free living, is that if you're listening, you become a better communicator. One, because you know what's on people's minds and what's important to them. Two, if you ask open-ended questions, for instance, if you're doing an interview with somebody and you were to say to them, or even if you were going on a date with somebody, I don't just ask them, you know, what is your work history, or what's your profession, or where do you want to take this job? Where do you see yourself with this particular project? I also ask them, what is their passion? Now, this really throws people off, because they're not expecting you to ask that type of personal question. And number two, people never really ask them that. So when you ask somebody, what's your passion, and they light up and they start talking about what's really most important to them, you now learn much more about the person and how they think of the world and how they operate in the world than you would otherwise.
And that goes right back to your curiosity.
It goes right back to the curiosity.
About being curious, very curious about people.
When someone starts to tell you their passion, then you know, especially if you're interviewing them, they're telling you one thing about where they see their job potential going, but they're telling you another thing about what they really want out of their life. And your job is to see that the two of those match up, and would that be a good fit for your company or for what you're doing or what your project is.
Mm-hmm. Find out if they're on the same page.
Absolutely. You asked me an important question at the beginning of the call, and one of the other things that brought me to have a passion for excuse-free living wasn't just how I grew up trying to get myself an education. I left high school a year ahead of my class without taking the GED. I decided to go to school year-round and tough it out. I had to work two jobs. I did not live at home. I left home at the age of 11 for 2 years and slept on the floor somewhere. Came back for 2 years to help with my mother, who was by then determined to be mentally ill, and then left at 15 and never came back. You have to also know when it's time to end certain relationships, or when it's time to take relationships to another place. And it's very important to be able to say to yourself, it's okay that I'm not going to be able to take care of everything and everybody, that people are going to have to learn to take care of themselves as well. And I can't teach everybody everything, and I can't be everything to everybody. It's not possible. And so as women, I think that that's a big factor in holding ourselves back, is using the excuse of being the ultimate caretaker.
Yes, the ultimate caretaker, filling a role that has been assigned maybe and not necessarily really bought into. It's not a role necessarily that one would choose, because not all women are caretakers.
Exactly. And if you were the parentified child at home where you had to do the cooking and cleaning and take care of your siblings, you're going to be more of the A-type personality out in the community and in your work. If you were the type of kid who felt their parent was always putting them down and you constantly had to prove yourself, you're going to be more of an A-type personality. If you were the kind of kid who got away with murder, then, hey, you may wind up being the kind of person who waits until the very end and procrastinates on everything and holds other people back. So the other thing is to look at your life in an excuse-free way of when are you being selfish and when are you being generous?
Now, that's a great question. When are you being selfish and when are you being generous? And you mentioned procrastination. There is so much that I hear from clients and from friends about the work situation where the boss is a micromanager and gets the finger in everything and jams everything up, and yet there's not the courage within the people that tell me these things to say, what's going on here? You're getting in the way. Things are being stopped. We can't meet the deadlines because we have constraints here. What's going on with all of that?
Well, I think it's difficult when you have somebody who's so detailed-oriented and so controlling. It stifles people's creativity and their curiosity to want to explore more in that team of how they can best help the company. And so when you micromanage, you limit your resources within the quality of the people that you've chosen to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you limit their curiosity, their creativity, and their conviction about the project, their passion for what they're doing, you're not going to get the best work effort out of them. You're also not going to have them feel like they get value out of what they do, and particularly in today's economy where so many people's salaries have been cut back or they're not getting a bonus this year or they're not getting a raise, you have to find some intrinsic value to why their job is important.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. And I know that in talking with you, you've said that we're looking for some ways and some coping tools that we can have. What are some coping tools to deal with somebody who is a micromanager? Because there is so much of that, it seems almost rampant today, perhaps with the fear of the job loss and the different workforce, because I know there are a lot of teams of employees that really are looking over their shoulder with almost a paranoia about, am I going to be next to lose my job?
Absolutely, and this is the time where that's happening, you know, everywhere, particularly in large corporations with telemarketers, with internet companies, where you have bosses coming in and constantly looking over your shoulder, watching your time card. How often do you go to the bathroom? How many minutes were you in the bathroom? Did you take your lunch break? I mean, it's become a world of micromanagement because they want the most performance out of you. One of the things that you have to realize when you micromanage people like that, you also wear them out. You wear them out. You physically and emotionally wear them out. And, you know, if the person is able to produce more than what is required of them in their work, there should be some give and take, just like you would have with your child. If your child completes their homework on time regularly and does a good job and gets a satisfactory grade to you, whatever that is, then there should be some give and take that, yes, every Thursday they get to play their Nintendo. Not every day, but every Thursday. So you have to find something to present to those people. And I really think the type of person that micromanages also has the excuse of being secretly angry.
More about that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, the person that micromanages, and look, we all have excuses, and, you know, I'll throw out just even a few excuses for people to hear in general just to see if they can identify themselves, which is, you don't understand. That's one I hear all the time from people. You just don't understand how difficult it is. Nobody's ever been in this position before. I want to go back to school, but I can't find the money or the time. people at work are not able to see things my way. Everybody's against me. I don't want to have to start over, so I'm not going to leave this job that's awful for me, that's dreadful, or this relationship. I'm too old. It's too late. I need to be right. I'm a caretaker. I'm an overachiever. I'm overweight. Nobody's going to promote me. I'm so overweight. They see me as slovenly. They see me as dirty. They don't feel I can do as adequate a job because I'm a woman. I mean, these are just some of the excuses that I hear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really feel that when you start breaking down what your excuses are, and so I really challenge people out there to really take a look at their life and ask themselves, what's your excuse? What's holding you back from having your dream life match your reality besides the economy? Something that may not be totally in your control, but you can take something from this catastrophe of an economy and maybe create something new and different in a life you didn't anticipate. So part of looking at your excuses is also saying, okay, let me get real and honest with myself. Let me really write out what's going on in my life right now. And I especially challenge your listeners to send me those, to blog those to me, or to send me an email at leslie@drleslietoday.com. We're running a competition so that whoever wins, will announce the winners in December 14th. At the beginning of the year in January, I'll choose 5 people to do life coaching with.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, they'll get 6 free sessions. And it's not a pitch to get them to sign up and pay money later. It's to get them started in their excuse-free life at the beginning of the year, looking at what's their excuse. And we'll look at those stories, and we'll really weave out some ones that we really think could really be helpful to many people that are feeling certain ways.
In doing a workshop on stress the other day, I was asked the audience to toss out, what are the excuses that you hear from your employees? And this was a group of employers. What are the excuses that you get from your employees that cause stress for you? And what are some of the excuses that they give generally? And one is, I've got another job to do. It's not my job. And a lot were the excuses which you previously mentioned. And some were, I don't know how to do it. It's her job to do it. She didn't tell me how to do it. Nobody told me I needed to do this. And it just, the litany just went on and on and on and on and on.
Well, here's the thing. And this goes back to, you know, conviction is and commitment. Nobody should have to tell you what to do. Yes, there are projects, obviously, that innately, just by the nature of the project or what you're working on, you need to know how the company approaches that. You know, what is their work ethic and principles that they've set up to an approach. But that should never stop you from going out of your way to show that extra effort. If you can't get someone in the company to show you, research it. If you can't get somebody, your boss above you, to help you find out the information, go to someone else and ask them the information, someone who's worked on that type of project. Don't be afraid to ask for help for fear of looking bad. It's the thing that often holds us back is our own feelings of insecurity, fear, lack of personal responsibility, and it's much easier to be in denial and blame someone else and say, well, she didn't tell me, so therefore I didn't try.
Exactly. And, that denial is so powerful. It's rampant, isn't it?
It is rampant. And so I always ask people, and again, I ask the listeners to challenge themselves with what's your excuse. What would you replace the drama with in your life if you didn't have that excuse? The time and energy it takes for you to think about your weight. If you need to lose 50 pounds and you're saying to yourself, what am I going to eat today? How am I going to eat it today? Where am I going to eat it today? Can I sneak some snacks? Or I brought my lunch, but I got invited to lunch. And all the things that you say to yourself, and maybe at lunch I should be taking a walk to lose the weight. Okay, on my way home I don't have time to make dinner. Okay, it's one more meal that's going to add to me being overweight. I'm just going to go for fast food. If you took all that mental energy, or my boss doesn't like me, my boss isn't helpful, my boss is micromanaging me, if you took all that mental energy and you decided to stop making excuses and find something in everything that you do, whether you initially like it or not, whether it's not part of your initial life plan, but you find something in everything that you understand has its purpose in that time frame, what would you replace the drama with? Because you'll have so much more mental energy. That 50 pounds of weight that you're carrying on your body is also the 50 pounds of mental energy that you're expending every day that you could be creating the life you really want.
Can you give a clear example of that for our listeners?
Sure. Just like with the food example, if you start saying to yourself, you know what, just because I'm overweight doesn't mean I have to wear things that accentuate the fact that I'm overweight. I'm going to take personal responsibility for my appearance that's outside of just worrying about the weight, but I'm going to start wearing more fitted clothes. I'm going to start putting makeup on. I'm going to start doing my hair regularly. When I come to the office and I ask for a new position, the position above me, and other people have been promoted and I haven't, I'm not going to assume it's because of my weight. I'm going to go in there and ask exactly what do I need to do. There was a woman that I worked with, and I think she's a great example. You know, for years she thought it was because of her weight that they weren't promoting her. And then one day she finally went in there and she said, what is it? You know, is this discrimination? And her boss looked at her and her boss said, no, you need to take classes in executive management. And if you go outside the box and take some classes on executive management, things that you can't learn directly here from your boss, and you go and do that, when you come back, job here, but when you come back with the information from that education, then I can promote you. Has nothing to do with your weight.
So until she asked, until she got up the courage to ask, what she assumed was totally off track.
She assumed that it was personal. She assumed that it was because of her body image, which people weren't looking at her body image. She was the one focused on her body image.
Mm-hmm.
And she was using her body image as an excuse as to why her performance, why she wasn't, you know, expanding her mind and her performance to give her a competitive edge to go and get the executive position that she wanted.
And I'm so glad you shared that example because it's a great example of how we get in our heads and we just assume that what we're thinking is how it is.
Exactly. And then we project that as to why this is not happening for
mm-hmm.
us and that's not happening for us. And we were very hard on ourselves also internally. We assume that whatever we're thinking that's negative about ourselves, everybody else is thinking. When, in fact, if you ask most people what are they thinking about while they're having a conversation with you, you're not really even on their mind. In fact, they'll have a difficult time 2 days later really repeating back what they shared with you. In fact, they may a week later say to you, when you say, yeah, remember that conversation, and they'll say, what conversation? Which one are you talking about? Oh, yeah, the one where you mentioned. They won't tell you the conversation. They'll say, oh, the one where you mentioned. So you have to realize that people are not as focused on you because they're so focused on themselves.
Exactly. We are the center of our own world. And
you know,
therefore, we tend to hold ourselves in more regard than really is take ourselves too seriously, I think.
Yeah, and I, you know, the other thing is in terms of dealing with people at work, specifically related to your company and excuse-free living is, you know, when people really, and again, this talking about blessing people and saying thank you, you know, if somebody comes up and has a negative remark, you know, or says to you, you look this way, or you do that, or some kind of thing where you feel like they're picking on you, again, in your mind, thank them. You can even thank them verbally. When you say thank you to someone, there's nowhere for them to go in the conversation. They're waiting for you to explain and defend, which is what women immediately do when they're challenged. We immediately start explaining. And when you start explaining, you lose your power right then and there. And that's the difference between men and women.
Said, that women have less explaining to do and less power to give away. And can you explain the connection between explaining and holding power?
When you start explaining yourself, basically you're turning yourself into a child. You're basically saying to that person, you have so much power over me, so much control, that you're smarter than me or you're better than me in some way, that I'm basically handing myself over to you to manipulate. Rather than if somebody challenges you on something and saying, you know, well, that was the choice I made, and sticking by that without going into, well, I chose that because I thought pink really represented this, and then green represented that, and then I threw in this because of that, that, and that. The reality is, if you feel that you did the best job that you could do, you feel a conviction about it, you have courage to present it, and you had a commitment to see it through, and you did the best that you could do, you don't have to explain yourself. Now, somebody may come back and say, hey, I have a different opinion of this or the direction you're going, which is totally fine. That's not giving away your power. That's now being in partnership.
Ah, so being in partnership comes from a place of strength, too.
Comes from a place of strength. And, you know, we do it with men all the time. We explain ourselves in family situations. Your husband comes home and says, why isn't dinner? Well, I had to run to the store. And then after the store, I had to go pick up little Johnny. And then, well, you know, the gardener didn't come, so I had to start calling, and the housekeeper called in sick, and blah, 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 blah. Okay. Most people don't care about all the reasons, all the excuses why you didn't get it done. They just want to know, did you get it done or did you not get it done? And if you can't get it done, can you renegotiate and fix it?
Exactly. And when you give a litany of excuses and ask a group of people, men and women, what's going through your mind as you're hearing this litany of excuses, they say, I don't care what it is. Nothing.
Right.
I just want you to stop and let's get on with what we're doing and
yeah,
what we're talking about.
Exactly. You know, and the other thing is, you know, when you're dealing with people in business, you need to be able to say to people, rather than making them defensive, like you were talking about the potential boss that is, you know, a micromanager, is to be able to say to them, instead of you didn't do this and you missed this detail and you, is to say to them, you know, I'm a little confused. What can we do to improve this? Or I'm a little confused because we discussed this. I'm getting this back. So I'm confused if there's a mistake here, or maybe we didn't communicate effectively. Can you tell me what your thought process is? That's being a partner with the person that works for you, rather than coming at them where no matter what they do, they're going to feel they're wrong, or whatever answer they're going to give is going to be wrong. They now can have a more open dialogue with you about where they're at, which also tells you where their job skills are at.
Exactly. So they become a partner rather than a defendant.
And you eliminate the next level of miscommunication. If there's a deadline on that particular project or piece of work, then you can eliminate any more further miscommunication and then get your needs met without having to go back again to them and say, you know, what did you do now? So the idea is to be direct with them, but ask them in a question-like way, not questioning like, you know, what the hell were you thinking, which you may be feeling, but I'm confused. Can you tell me more about what happened, who was on this, how did you come to this, that kind of thing?
I think very definitely. That it's a win-win for everybody.
Right, and, you know, particularly as women, and I know women know this, you know, I've experienced it God knows how many times in my lifetime, where, you know, someone comes at you and they're talking down to you, and you know darn well that on that project, you're actually smarter than your boss. I mean, not to blow my own ego, but many times, this happens to people all the time, where they're sitting there and they realize they have more common sense than their boss, and they're not really sure how their boss got promoted to that position, but they know that they understand the bigger picture than actually even their boss does. And, you know, it does help it helps for you, even when you're talking to your boss, to take a less defensive stance and don't assume that your boss is out to get you because they've critiqued you.
Well, and bosses usually are not out to get someone. If one has a sense they're out to get them, then one, it could be paranoia, or two, it could be the case in which case several things have happened that are solid, definite clues that they are on the path to eliminate that employee.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, when we were talking about the issue of power and not giving your power away, one of the things that I really believe in with excuse-free living as it applies to the workplace is that instead of saying to someone, you know, I don't want to hear your excuses, or, you know, just get it done kind of thing, where you throw your emotion into it, you know, remember, you're a role model for those people. So if you act out emotionally and you cuss or raise your voice or tantrum, or they see you shutting your door all the time, you know, pulling your hair out, guess what? They're going to feel that it's okay to act that way in the workplace also. So remember, your employees are watching all the time, even when you think they're not watching. And one of the ways to reel your power back in is to be able to say to your employee, is to say, you know what, I just need you to hear me right now. I'm not expecting a response. This is what I need from you.
So just give them permission to listen.
Right, and just say to them,
responding.
I'm not expecting a response. You don't have to defend yourself here. I just need you to hear me out. This is what I need from you. The conversation is clean. All they're doing is listening. They're taking their notes, and now they know what charge you've given them, what set of responsibilities they now have to fulfill without, you know, ongoing trying to challenge your authority.
And that makes it, as you said, a very clean situation.
Very clean. You come off direct. You know, I mean, how many times have women been called, bitch? How many women in the workforce, you know, because of the way they said it? Not, it's not what they said. It's the way they say it. And if you say it in a more direct, matter-of-fact, listen, I'm available to you, but at the same time, this is what I need from you. You need to produce this. Without attitude, without throwing up their hands or whatever people expect that women are going to do, that most of the time we don't really do, you're going to have a lot better situation, one, working with your male coworkers and working with your female coworkers, because people are going to start to see you as unshakable, that you're not the person to come to with a lot of drama. You're not the person who's trying to create a lot of drama. You're the person who just wants to see the job get done, a successful job for everyone.
Definitely, and the more low-key one is, the better it is for everybody.
Exactly, exactly. You know, so this requires, you know, again, when I say what's your excuse, a certain level of maturity. So we're talking about, you know, in terms of what's your excuse, how do you listen to people? Not just how much you listen, how do you listen? How do you communicate back to them? Do you believe in forgiveness, or do you hold a grudge? Are you the type of person that somebody makes a mistake and you can't let it go? Are you the type of person who's willing to take action? If something you see something's remiss, do you run and get that person in trouble, or do you try to do something to assist that person, ask them if they need more assistance, if you have the time? You know, or are you the person who's capable of being courageous enough when you know somebody is not doing their job to be able to go to your boss and say, hey, look, this is unfair to me. I need your support. This is unfair. I'm doing my work. They're not pulling their share, and we're getting paid the same amount. So either give me a raise and more vacation time and sick days, or I need you to do something about the situation, because I'm just going to punch my clock out and leave at 5 o'clock like everybody else and not put the extra time in that I know that you really need to get the project done.
Uh-huh. So I know that when we encourage a client to do that, there's certain, again, an excuse, which is fear, that they would be fired. How realistic is that?
Say that again. How realistic
when,
is
when we hear clients say, I'm getting an inordinate amount of work and I can't get it all done, and there's an expectation that I'll do the work because I have done it before, but now I'm tired, I'm not getting compensated for it, and I can't go to my boss, though, and say, this is unfair, I can't do anything about it. No, you've got to do something about it, because I think I'll be fired and I need my job. I have children to support, and on their excuses go, their reasons go. How can one really be step into their courage and step into their conviction and their
commitment
to themselves?
Write it down. Nobody, a boss or the person that hires you, can deny when you put it in writing and list. Don't list it as a complaint. List it as, these are the tasks that I currently do. This is how much time each task takes. And put all of it down. Okay? This is supposed to be part of what I do. This is actually supposed to go to so-and-so, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just put it down. Just make a list of all the job tasks that you are currently doing. You know, if you're somebody who's filing, are you filing 50 things a day, or are you filing 500 things a day? Is it realistic that you can file 500 things in that day? So, you know, the idea is to put it down so that your boss can see it in black and white.
Okay.
Because when people learn in word pictures more than they learn just verbally. If you ask people, like I said, how much information did they retain if they walked away from this phone call, they'll say by the end in a few weeks, maybe 20% of it. Okay. So when you write it down and you put it in a word picture, you make it more concrete both for yourself and for your boss to be able to say, wow, I didn't realize you were doing that much.
And that helps you solidify in your own mind what you're really doing.
Exactly. And does it really match up to the what you were given as terms of what your job was going to be? You know, you're often given a write-up of what they expect, what tasks they expect, and what your job description is. Does that match up? Now, some companies in today's society are going to say, well, you know, we're all a team. We have to pull in and do a lot of things, you know, that we don't want to do and, you know, all that kind of stuff. They're going to come in and say that. And that is true, but there also is a reality to the fact that you can't do it all by yourself.
That's right. And I don't think a lot of people are expected to do it all by themselves. And
you know, there are some people, and, you know, I've done this where, you know, I've been overwhelmed by what my boss gave me, and for years I worked for other people, and I'll tell you, there was just times where I just said, I'm not taking that call. I did crisis intervention, which is also why I have such a passion for excuse-free living. I did crisis intervention for 10 years where I was actually the person who had to go talk to the person so that they didn't kill themselves or someone else.
Oh, my goodness.
And I did that for 10 years out in the field, not on the phone. And the thing is to go in there and immediately assess the situation. You need to go in and assess the tone and feeling of the situation that you're walking into. So I really challenge people to start paying more attention to their environment. What's the feeling when you walk in? What's the energy when you walk in? What are people focused on when you walk in? And what are they communicating to you when you walk in by just observing their behavior? And a great way to challenge yourself to do this, both in your professional and personal life, is to start going out to dinner by yourself. Just going out to dinner one night a week by yourself, or a lunch where you sit there on your own and you interact with the people at the restaurant, you will learn a lot about other people. You will also create an opportunity for you to become more independent and take the lead in initiating conversation, in initiating getting to know yourself better.
Oh, yes, and that's a scary thing to dine alone. I recall the first time that I dined alone in a hotel dining room where there were families everywhere. I was the only single person there, and it was, I learned I could do it. It didn't feel good, and yet I was proud of me for doing it.
Absolutely, and, you know, it doesn't mean if you're a person who doesn't like to do it for a lifetime, you don't have to do it for a lifetime, but I challenge you to take some risks in your personal life that can transfer to the job world. take some risks in the job world that you can transfer to your personal life. Because really how you run your personal life is often how you run your business as well.
Mm-hmm. Very definitely.
Yeah, if you're a chaotic person at home, you're going to be a chaotic person at work. And also know how to manage money. I think women in general are now, there was a report in Newsweek that said that 75%, it's out right now, you can pick up the magazine, says that 75% of women currently make all household decisions. They make all household decisions. Men only make
25%. Yeah.
25% men make decisions. 75% of the time women are the decision makers. And you have to recognize that just because you might be re-entering the job force also, some of you are re-entering the job force and you haven't been in a professional position in a long time and you've just started again, doesn't mean that the skills that you had at home are not transferable. If you're making 75% of the decisions at home, you can certainly learn to make 75% of the decisions at work. So don't sell yourself short.
Now, that's an interesting stat when you put it that way. And women do control, I believe it's 86% of the financial decision or the purchasing decisions made.
The purchasing decisions, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is the new statistic came out that said 57% of all women are unhappy in their job, even though they might be making more money than men right now. They may have a better job position. They're unhappier than men are right now. And so you have to ask yourself in your what's your excuse free moment when you take time out for yourself and you're asking yourself, what's my excuse? What's your excuse for not liking where you are? Because, you know, I've been in jobs that I absolutely hated. I couldn't stand the boss. I couldn't stand the position. I couldn't stand the hours. Every day I'd come in and I'd think, if I have to come here one more time, I'll go postal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you walk in, but, you know, that negative energy that you're taking into the office, you have to remember you're going to get that negative energy back because you're going to be isolating yourself. You're going to be hanging out with other coworkers who are always miserable instead of the coworkers who find something positive in what they do.
That's right. Misery does hang with misery, and positivity hangs with positivity.
And so what I suggest to you is then create other projects. If you're at a job right now where there's not enough work and you're down sitting at your desk trying to pretend you have enough work and you don't, create something for yourself that can take you to the next step. Maybe it's studying for that exam, for that executive class. Maybe it's looking through the coursework for a junior college of how you can make it affordable to go back to school. Many junior colleges charge $50 or $100 for a semester of classes these days. So trying, or maybe getting certified in something. You know, certifications only take 6 months to a year most often. Maybe a few take 2 years, but most of them are up about 6 months to a year. You don't have to reinvent the wheel and go back to four-year college in order to go back to school and find something that is good for you. Because just because you get a certificate doesn't mean one day you won't be the owner of that business.
And that's a very good recommendation that you give, Dr. Leslie, to move ahead. Don't stay stuck in the negativity of where you are. Find a way to get some positivity in there.
And the other way that you do that, because I want to make sure people get some basic information, and then let's just, if anybody has a question or anything, you know, I'd be happy to answer it, which is you need to create goals for yourself. And so the way to structure your life so that you can find what your purpose is, what your vision is to have a one-month goal, a three-month goal, a six-month goal, a year goal, and then replicate that, and then check in with yourself. And with that, you create a five-year vision. If you had your dream life, where would you like to be in 5 years? Where would you like to see yourself grow to in 5 years? Maybe it's owning a home. Maybe it's a different type of business. Maybe it's not working at all anymore. Maybe it's spending more time with your children. Whatever that is for you. If you could have your dream life in 5 years, if you can project 5 years from now what you would like, and then practically repeat those goals for those 5 years And the goals can be interchangeable. You know, a one-month goal might turn into a six-month goal. A six-month goal might turn into a one-month goal.
And
the idea is
it's when you get started on the road to it that you find out what's realistic.
You find out what's realistic, and you're also able to chart your progress so that, because sometimes we're so in the middle of it, you know, we're working, we're tired, we're exhausted, we come home, we have more responsibilities, you know, and it's hard to see your accomplishments as you're going. So in order for you to continue on that path to get to that vision, it's important that you're able to check some boxes off. Okay, I got that three-month goal. Wow, I did it in 1 month. Yay for me. What's a new three-month goal?
Yeah, enjoy your successes. Build some successes along the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I know that one thing that you say is that you've discovered that it's not the size of the problem, it's the size of the feeling. What if you could finally let go of your fears? Let's make an excuse-free life. Can you say more about the size of the feeling?
You know, not everybody has to have, like, I come from a very difficult background, and I didn't even touch the tip of the iceberg of what my real-life experience was growing up. And not everybody has to have some dramatic, as some people refer to it, you know, Oprah moment type life, you know. Many people out there come from good families. It's not just the people who, like myself, are coming from a tragedy to triumph situation. It's also people who have come from, you know, middle-class families that are really, really struggling
mm-hmm.
with the right role modeling. They don't have enough role modeling for how to get to the next place. They have feelings of their own insecurities. Maybe they feel that they were overly sheltered. Maybe they feel that their parents did fine financially. There was always food on the table, and they went to a proper school, but maybe their parents were limited educationally. So it doesn't have to be a dramatic story, but it's the point is that the feeling for you may be as great a feeling as it is for me for something more dramatic. That doesn't make the feeling that you have about what's going on in your life any less diminished. And you need to honor those feelings. We don't have to constantly say to ourselves, there's someone starving in Darfur, to legitimize that we have a right to have our feelings and then work on it.
Mm-hmm. Sure, because our feelings are all, they are us. They are part of who we are.
You have to learn to manage your feelings. And if you're constantly putting them aside and diminishing them and saying, oh, well, that's so small. Why am I even bothering with that? Well, guess what? All those small things add up, and that's how you find yourself without even realizing it that you're depressed, that you're anxious, that you're feeling resentment. And most people don't even know the signs and symptoms of depression. So it's really important that you check in with yourself. How am I feeling? What's going on with me? And again, like I said, it's not the size of the problem, it's the size of the feeling associated with, and learning to manage those emotions so that you can achieve what you want to achieve.
Yes, because our feelings are a part of who we are, not who we are.
Absolutely, and we have a tendency to be very black and white in terms of how we're feeling. And excuse-free living, you know, some people say, wow, that sounds kind of tough. How can you live perfectly all the time? Excuse-free living is not about learning to be perfect. It's learning to have balance in your life, that you are living the quality of life that you most are impassioned by. I am living the quality of life that I am most passionate about, which is helping people on a larger scale and using my life as a tool for other people to be able to then go and help themselves. So I ask people once again, what is your excuse? What are you using your life for? And what, at the end of your life, would you like to say about yourself in terms of what your connection was to people, your community, to the global society, to our country, and to spiritually, whatever your relationship is spiritually.
So it's all about the connections.
All about the connections.
And part of the, and goes back to another part of the four C's, curiosity, conviction, courage, and commitment.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Nobody should leave this earth without feeling that they were known, that what was important to them was honored, that who they were was honored. Everybody should leave this earth having some sense, at least my hope and my gift to them with excuse-free living is that when they leave this earth, they know that their life had meaning.
Well, your life certainly has significant meaning. Can you give us a success story with one of your clients that you could share with us?
Oh, my gosh. Male or female? Pick one.
Your choice.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? I had a client who always thought that she wanted to be a full-time professional singer. And she does have a lovely voice. I actually had the opportunity, after I stopped seeing her, she sent me a copy of her CD that she had produced herself, and she did have quite a lovely voice. However, she was now 39. She had gained a tremendous amount of weight prior to coming to see me, which was actually the reason she came to see me. The reason she came to see me really turned out not to be the real reason. The real reason is somewhere along the way she felt she lost her path, and she didn't realize it. And so when I began talking to her about what is she passionate about, what is she most interested in, she said, well, you know, I'm 39 and I'm at a crossroads. A, I'm at a job that I'm not in love with because I don't like my boss. I think he's an idiot. And my boss is the kind of guy who's not paying attention to everything and then comes in and throws out these directions or orders, and he doesn't even realize what's going on or where we're at on a particular project. He's out of the loop and doesn't even realize he's out of the loop all the time. So, and she said, I have this husband who's, you know, a really, really nice guy. A really, really nice guy. The problem is I'm not turned on by him. He's complacent. You know, he's always around. He's not the kind of guy who's competitive in sports or, you know, going out there and trying to conquer the world. He's just this really nice person. And now that I'm 39 and I'm overweight, I'm also wondering, this may be my last shot to have a kid. So she has all these components going on all at the same time. And basically what I looked at her life, we went step by step. Okay, if you really had wanted a professional singing career, you've been married 11 years to the same man who supports that, who doesn't mind if you had stopped working in order to do that, why aren't you doing it? You didn't have children at home. You had someone there to support you to allow you to go on the road and do that, and you had financial assistance. Is it really true that you want a professional singing career? Or is that an excuse for why you have put off having children or put off really looking at your relationship with your husband if he is the best choice for you or changing jobs? And she began to realize she had been using her singing as an excuse for putting off other parts of her life that required responsibility, taking personal responsibility, having sex with her husband, engaging him, talking to him about what's going on in the relationship and what's missing at this stage, sitting down and talking about, do we want a baby? Let's get realistic. And instead of putting off her fears, that in reality it turns out she really, really wanted a baby. And she had used everything else as an excuse for not moving to have the baby. Why? Because she had been the caretaker of her parents growing up and her five brothers and sisters growing up. And she had to come clean with herself that she was using these other things as an excuse because she was afraid to go back to being that caretaker, the person she was growing up. And now her survival skills and her coping strategies changed by coming to see me, and she got a chance to realize she's not that same kid. The role that she's having now is not something she has to do. It's a role that she gets to do. She gets to have children if she chooses that. This is not being forced upon her as when she was a child.
That is marvelous. That's phenomenal. A real example of how shifting an attitude, getting past her excuses, getting honest and digging into what's really going on allows everything to open up and be free.
It totally does, and she was able to sit down and finally say to her husband, look, you know, part of the reason I overeat is we don't have sex. We're living like we're roommates. Is there a possibility we can rejuvenate this? And if not, maybe should we do something different, like not be together? And she was able to confront the fear of hearing his answer.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned around and he said, "Gosh, I've been waiting for this. I've been, you know, I was." He turned around and he said, "I've been fearful of asking you because I was fearful of being rejected sexually and finding out that maybe you weren't in love with me anymore or didn't want to try." And so she found out that he had been living, mirroring how she felt the whole time, and neither one was saying anything. Nobody was addressing the elephant in the room. And so they started having fun together. They started going out together. They started making dates together. And oddly enough, this all transferred into the workplace because the boss that she really felt was totally missing the mark and wasn't available, it turns out that other people felt the same way, and a number of people started speaking up, and she wound up being one of them, and she got a different boss and a promotion.
So just by being honest, it, a whole lot of things were came about for the better.
Excuse-free living is not some theory, you know, I'm not pretending I'm Freud or Jung or, you know, pretending something I'm not. I am a clinical psychologist, a doctor of clinical psychology. I am a licensed marriage family therapist. What I'm saying is I think that this is the time this country needs to hear the truth, not a lot of fancy lingo, not a lot of promises, some really concrete advice that practically applied works. I had to do it in my own life. I had to work those 7 days a week. I had to go to school at night. I did all of that. And if you are true to what you really want and you're true to yourself, you can do it.
Amen. You certainly can. And what freedom there is in this, and as you say, excuse-free living, you make no excuses for anything.
Well,
and
you know what? I'm so glad you used the word freedom because in the book that I'm currently writing, Excuse-Free Living, my last chapter, my conclusion really is that excuse-free living is about personal freedom. It's at the end of the day, it's about creating freedom in your life, the freedom to choose who you want to be and to go and take action on that.
And when will your book be out?
I hope next year. I'm praying. I don't know. I'll find out soon. As soon as I know, I'll let you know. I'll find out very soon, and as soon as I know, I'm going to let you know.
Well, please do, because I know our listeners will want to know and our members will want to know. And how can we get in touch with you, and what is ahead for you, Dr. Leslie?
Oh, gosh, I'm doing a lot of speaking engagements across the country, reaching out to people, adolescents, college kids. I'm trying to talk to women, I'm trying to talk to men, particularly in this economy with a role reversal of them really feeling destroyed in terms of being a provider and their self-esteem and how all that's trickling down into the family, women going into the workplace. And so I really want people to understand that excuse-free living is not just about your divorce. It's also about how you are in the world and how you show up every single day in the world and how you vote. How you come together in your community, how you reach out to others, your neighbors, and things that you can do to help each other through this tough time. So, yeah, excuse-free living. And the what's your excuse, I'm asking people, and I sincerely challenge you to email me at leslie@drleslietoday.com to email me, or you can blog me your stories. And I would love to hear from you and hear what you have to say about what's going on in your life, and you'll get 6 free life coaching sessions with me for excuse-free living at the beginning of the year.
Oh, that is very, very generous. And I know you're getting some very interesting stories there. And thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Leslie.
Thank you.
Appreciate you sharing your expertise and your 4 C's and excuse-free living and the freedom that comes from excuse-free living.
Absolutely. And if people want to find out more about me, please feel free. I've been quoted in many articles, TV shows. You certainly can go to drleslietoday.com. Feel free to, like I said, blog me, challenge me on some of my blogs if you find it interesting or you have a difference of opinion. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Leslie. And we at the Smart Woman's Club do so much appreciate your talent and your expertise and sharing your information with us and for helping smart women learn more about what is important to them and excuses that they have holding them back, and also some of their friends and coworkers, because
we're all working together. Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's such a joy, and I love the title, Smart Women. We are all smart women. So,
absolutely,
you know,
we are smart women.
Exactly.
So thank you very much, Dr. Leslie. And as we say in the Smart Women's Club, keep on being smart.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. So long. Bye-bye.